Sports Studio. Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Boy, you hear that story on SportsCenter with Adrian talking about NMSU basketball? It makes it sound like Animal House. I mean, honestly, you just kind of wonder, well, can it get any worse? Weirder. When was the last time you heard a story in sports about someone pulling down their pants? Pantsing? I didn't even know that was even a word until just now. Pants. They were pantsed. All right. We found out today because apparently Shaq and Deuce both spoke to ESPN, and they told Sarah Coelho, who is the ESPN reporter, that it wasn't just them, it was also coaches. Well, I guess the more they talk, the more you probably feel good that NMSU completely cleaned house and went with an entirely new group from top to bottom. Because the truth is, the more these details, as disturbing as they are, come out, the more, in my mind, they had to make sure that nobody from that group was sticking around. Because the whole thing is just, it gets more and more bizarre by the day. It really does.
Yeah, I hate this story for so many reasons, Steve. It just really shows you the lack of control. I mean, the utter lack of control, the complete lack of control that head coach Greg Hire had on the program. Hearing that assistant coaches were, I guess, harassed by these players that were named right here, Kim Akin Jr., Dr. Bradley, DeShondre Washington. And by the way, those players who spoke out against the hazing or against the sexual assaults, those would be the players who would get it even more, according to Odeniwu and Benjamin, who spoke to ESPN. And, credit to these guys for going out to ESPN talking about their horrific, things that happen behind closed doors. And a lot of this, was supposed to kind of go and stay behind closed doors, but they're speaking out against it. They want justice, and they want it to go against all those players who inflicted all this against their players. And now we're hearing coaches.
Like, I've never heard anything like this before going down for a college program. I just haven't. I know that there have been some hazing incidents, but I've never heard anything that's extended to almost the whole team, according to these two former players. So the whole thing is just weird. It really is. And, it's one of those things where if they all kept it within the program, but word did not leak outside of the program about what was going on until finally the police got involved. Well, that's one of those things where you say to yourself, man, players even said they were afraid to speak up. They were afraid of what could happen. Coaches did nothing. And I think it was this story that I just read where essentially Deuce Benjamin was smoking weed, and finally his dad saw it and asked him what was going on, and that's when he finally told him what was happening about this whole situation. And according to the story, Deuce thought it was normal that this is what went on. So again, I find the whole thing hard to believe. Alicia Baron with us as well. She is the third member of the Sports Talk team today. And Alicia, since you're a former college athlete and you're the youngest of the three of us, I mean, I'll ask you. I mean, when you read these stories and you read the details, as someone who actually played college athletics, could you even fathom that something like this would go on for any program? Not yours, but just any program in general.
No, I think the craziest part about this whole article is that it says it's sometimes treated as a pregame ritual. That means it was very often. So I don't know how the coaches never noticed, or even when they say talk about it, that they were on the bus. Like, that bus is not that big for you not to notice what is going on inside. And I think when I traveled as a college athlete, the most important thing was like bonding on those travel trips. So it's kind of sad to see that that's where it all just went down, like traveling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that is, you know, the whole situation that if you haven't read the article, yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, Sarah Coelho she spoke to the two players and they told her about things that happened away from their press conference and away from the lawsuit. More detailed, more anecdotes, things like that. So, and the truth is that, and I know, you know, Mario has been mentioned a lot with this story, Mario Mocha, the athletic director at New Mexico State. But the fact is this, if all this hazing and everything around it stayed inside the program and never leaked out, which is what it sounds like, I mean, from all indications, the two players essentially said they were afraid to speak up. Nobody did anything about it. So therefore, nothing was ever reported and nothing ever got out. It's very possible that this dysfunctional program that was more like Animal House than it was like a Division I institution, it was all just kept inside until finally the authorities were able to get involved, which is what led to the program getting shut down. So, you know, the question was asked about Mario yesterday. Will he survive after what happened with reviewing his contract extension? Look, if he knew nothing about this until it went public, then what do you say? I mean, then you know what? You made a really bad hire. Pardon the pun. A guy was a total disaster who I've never seen anybody lose control of a program as quickly as he did. Sound like he had no rules, let anything go. And ultimately, you know, the program went into the crapper in record time. And that's hard to do considering how successful they were in previous seasons.
You know, as we continue to hear more of the details around this, I guess I just get more disgusted with this this story specifically with the New Mexico State men's basketball program. Like, I don't want to hear news about some of these players named in the lawsuit playing basketball right away. I get it. Everybody here it's all an allegation right here. But still, what we're dealing with is beyond, you know, it's very, very, very serious. And the fact that they continue to come out with more accusations toward these players right here, these guys should not be playing next year in college basketball whatsoever, and they might be facing criminal charges when it's all said and done.
That's true. You never know. It's very possible as this thing continues to get worse before it gets any better. That's very possible. But yeah, it's a crazy start to our show because the story on ESPN.com just paints a very bleak picture. It really does. But you know, once again, when the hazing story went public, immediately the team who was in California was sent home and the program was shut down. Like the minute it happened, the program, they suspended operations and shut the whole thing down. So I'm not really sure what more they could do if they weren't aware of this until the campus police were involved. I just don't know. I'm at a loss because, you know, it sounds like players didn't want to speak up. Everything was kept under wraps, and it took one of the players going to the authorities for this to finally escalate into something that shut the program down.
Right, and it was just a complete lack of control with that men's basketball program by their head coach, by all the coaches involved. I mean, there's adults in the room all around. These guys are not kids anymore, and there's adults all around. And you use the reference Animal House. You can say Animal House. You could say almost like a prison because that's what was happening with the New Mexico State basketball program.
It's just what you would never think. It really is. So, you know, but now they've got a guy in Jason Hooten, who's about as opposite of this former head coach as you're going to find. And all new players, all new staff, all new everything. And that's what it needs. There shouldn't be any holdovers from this prior regime. It should all be new. You have to. So that's real interesting. as we get started here on the program. Let's go to Orly. He'll kick us off. We got a big show today. A lot of UFC coverage coming up in our first hour as we get ready for UFC 288 tomorrow night on ESPN+. Orly, what's going on?
Not much, Steve. Good to hear you guys.
Thanks. Good to hear from you, Orly.
Yeah. Say, let me... Okay. It seems like he's lost institutional control of this program. Whether Mocha's not involved or not, he's still in charge of the athletic department. So bottom line, he still should know what's going on.
How? But if they keep it, everything under wraps, okay, you're the athletic director, right? But let's just say nobody speaks up, coaches don't tell you, players don't say anything, everything stays bottled up because they're all afraid of what could happen. How will you know unless somebody comes forth and actually tells you what's going on?
Bottom line is going to fall on him because he's in charge of the athletic department. Thing is, didn't SMU, it was money there.
Yeah, they paid. They were paying players. That's right.
But they lost institutional control.
Well, I mean, look, here's the thing. You say they lost institutional control. The minute this went public, they shut the program down and they fired the coaches. I mean,
but there was problems before this.
Well, there was the shooting incident. Correct. There was the Mike Peake shooting incident. That's right.
And when they came to El Paso that game, I told a couple of New Mexico State fans, hey, this kid Washington, he's not a good dude. There's something wrong with him. You can see it. So, I mean, they all jumped.
By the way, didn't UTEP recruit Washington too, Adrian? Was he one of the ones? Yeah, the Miners recruited him too. They were trying to get him.
Well, going back to this, where's the NCAA on this?
We don't know yet.
Because
we don't know.
You know, could they, now, I don't like to use the word, but the death penalty could be enforced here in the basketball program.
Nope.
Not the football, the basketball.
I don't know. Let's face it,
what they did to these kids.
You're right. What they did to them was inexcusable.
Raping them.
You're right, and there could be jail time as a result of this.
There's going to be plea bargains all over the place.
Well, all
even,
I could,
even
yeah.
the attorney already said it. We're looking if they want to settle, we'll settle.
Yep. So they're looking. The right so in other words, they're looking probably for some money when it's all said and done.
That's said and done.
Yep.
Bottom line is, it was a bad hire.
Yep.
No doubt about it. But not the harassing of it and all this, what they did to these two kids, it's uncalled for.
Yeah.
Look, I went through harassment. I got hazed. We all got hazed when I was in the fraternity. But we expect nothing to this extent.
No, of course not.
This is not hazing. This is a sexual assault.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know.
This is the sad part. Innocent young men were involved in this.
Correct.
And if the coaches knew, and it's like the young ladies on the radio show with you right now. That's a small bus. People know what's going on in that bus. They're not exactly an airplane. They're small, and you know what's going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they turn their head to it, no. I mean, it started with, well, actually, if you go back, it started with a fight at the New Mexico game.
Yeah, that's where it all began. That's pretty much where it all began. That's right. That's right.
And it started snowballing. Nobody took control.
But I don't know if anybody had specifics on the fight itself until after the Peak incident a few weeks later.
Right. Well, everybody already knew about the fight because it was there on tape.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the coach and everybody knew there was a fight. Did they get a hold of those kids and tell them, hey, what are you doing? Why are you fighting? It just reeks of cover-up.
Well,
it really does.
Once again, here's the deal. They're going to investigate now. The same group that investigated Sandusky is now investigating this. If they find that there were things at the high level that were covered up and not brought and are brought to the surface after the fact, then you will be seeing, from the top down, a whole new group, a whole new staff, including Mario. If they find that it was completely isolated in the program and nothing came out until the incident was reported to the cops, then you probably won't see anything outside of the suit itself. Remember, Mario was not part of the lawsuit. Mario was not part of it, okay?
But they're now questioning his contract.
Well, yeah, because the reason they're questioning the contract, timing was terrible, Orly. It was the last day that our visa was there.
It reeks of improprieties. But bottom line is, it goes back, just like everything goes, it goes back to the top. Whether he knew or not, he was still in charge of that athletic department, mm-hmm. along with the president of the university. They're all, hey, I get in trouble in my business. Who's going to come after me? They're not going to go after an agent. They're going to come after me because I'm the one in charge, and that's what I'm saying.
Yep. Now, you're right.
I hate to say, I like Mara. I think he's done a great job. For the money they've got there, they don't have the funds. He's done a great job. I just hope it doesn't all come back. We don't know the full extent of this investigation.
No, we'll find out in time. You're right about that. And like I said, if the investigation proves that there were a lot of things covered up, then heads will roll. There's no doubt about it.
Look at the time when they interviewed him at the hotel with the police department. Hyer said he didn't know about it. 8:00 in the morning. I guarantee you he knew about that at 2 in the morning when it happened.
Yeah.
You can't tell me he didn't know about it.
No. You know?
I mean, there's a lot of cover-up right now. The New Mexico State program, basketball especially, is in trouble. I like their new coach. I like his attitude. He wants to have nobody. How can you have a young man on the team that's suing the university? You can't have it.
Of course you can,
and I like what he did. Cleaned house.
Of course
nobody that's tied to that program should be on that program.
Have a good weekend, Orly. Always good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Orly getting in. Man, Orly wanted to get his money's worth today. Hasn't been calling in a while, and yeah, he didn't hold back. All right, UFC 288, main event. We will have conversations with both participants as Sports Talk continues. First, though, let's go to Charlie One for this traffic update. All right, Adrian, thank you very much. As we continue here on Sports Talk, well, it is right around the corner. You can get the live coverage of UFC 288, Sterling versus Cejudo from Prudential Center in Newark, coming up tomorrow, May the 6th on ESPN+, which includes the main card and the prelims. And speaking of the main event, we've got Aljamain Sterling with us right now here as we continue on Sports Talk. First off, great to have you on the show. And how does it feel to be headlining UFC 288 tomorrow night?
It feels good. It's what dreams are made of. This is what I got into the sport for. Thinking about things like this, visualizing my name would be top billing on an event. You know, I've come from a long career of just competing from high school to college on the amateur circuit as an athlete and now as a professional. So this is my first time with that top billing spot. It's on the East Coast. I'm the first champ to defend their belt back home from Long Island. We've had three champions. So it's a great opportunity for me to start things off on the right foot.
By the way, I lived a little bit in Long Island too. Massapequa Park years ago, long before you were around. So I'm excited about that. You got to be excited about bringing this to your hometown because people can make the trip. They can take the train over, and before you know it, they'll be there in Newark rooting you on.
Yeah, 100%. I grew up in Uniondale. I actually now live in Massapequa. So I know exactly where Massapequa Park is, right next to Johnny McGorry's. Right on the end of the path.
When it comes to this fight coming up, what is your initial scouting report on Cejudo?
Well, I just found out that he has a gold medal. I heard from him. He was telling some people that he has a gold medal. So his wrestling should be pretty good based on what he's saying. And he's no slouch when it comes to striking as well. Tough dude. He's got some grit. And he's a good competitor. So that's the main thing. He's got some good feints. I just got to be me and do what I'm doing and use all my tools to as best of my abilities, and it should be a good night for myself. But that was a joke. I already knew he had a gold medal. He just constantly tells everybody. So I wasn't sure if you guys heard him say it for the 1 millionth time that he has a gold Olympic medal. But yeah, I focus on me a lot, but I do also try to see what my opponents do for their strengths and try to make sure I'm seeing those things in the training room so that I could best prepare for it, knowing how I want to react, knowing how to react so that everything's more more like an habit instead of more instinctual versus trying to figure it out on the fly. Like, of course, it's not going to be exactly dialed in the exact way that they do it, but you try to give yourself those looks as best as you can so that you can properly prepare. So when you're in there, it feels like you just had another day of practice.
Fair enough. Makes a lot of sense. I get that. You have, you know, had to battle some injuries over the years. I guess last year you had a neck injury that at one point put one of your fights on hold, but you got back in the ring. You've had the belt now for a while. For people that have never actually competed in mixed martial arts, and especially at a level like you're at, talk a little bit about the physical toll that this does put on your body, whether it's training or then getting into the ring in some of these big main events like you're going to have on Saturday.
It's a lot. You ever competed as a wrestler or as an athlete in general, grapple sessions, sparring sessions, that type of thing. So if you haven't dealt with anything like that, that's the best way I could try to describe it. Just imagine being sore from a lift, a heavy lift day, max rep day, and feeling like that every day. It could get like pretty intense. So you got to kind of try to pick and balance like when you want to redline, or not redline, but when you want to push the limits of the body and when to kind of pull back.
I know we've got limited time with you right now because you got to get on and do another one of these hits. As far as predictions about what will happen, do you expect this to go the distance, or do you think it's going to end earlier than that, Aljamain?
We got places to go Saturday night. I got my dancing shoes ready. I got to make sure I get this man out of here in two rounds. So best believe if you're going to catch me in New York City having a good night, I just got to make sure I go out there and perform and do things the right way, and I think I take him out in two.
There you go. An early exit. I like that. Good prediction. It was a good chance of getting a chance to spend some time with you. We appreciate it. Enjoy fighting in front of your hometown. That's got to be a dream come true. And look forward to the next time we get a chat with you back here on the show.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
He's Aljamain Sterling and joins us here on Sports Talk as we continue. Meanwhile, Adrian, when you talk about what, you know, his confidence level is going to be at for this fight. It's, you know, here's a guy that, you know, has been doing this for a long time, never headlined before. He talked about the importance of that. He also talked about how his opponent loves to give everybody the reminder that he won a gold medal, which I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk to Cejudo about and ask him about that too. But you could tell that it's something that maybe rubs him a little bit the wrong way, because he feels that that's his claim to fame, as opposed to this man who is a champion, a world champion, and will put the belt on the line again tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, three successful title defenses. He's won 8 fights in a row, and not to mention, Steve, he is unbeaten in the state of New Jersey. I love this fight for so many reasons. Cejudo is a type of guy who's coming back after briefly retiring from the sport as well. So, yeah, there's a lot on the line with this one.
At the same time, he's like approaching his mid-30s, prime of his career. So when you look at what Aljamain Sterling's been able to do right now, you got to feel like, you know, we're just kind of reaching the tip of the iceberg at this point.
Yeah, it was first a split decision over Peter Yan in their highly anticipated rematch, UFC 273. And then he beat out TJ Dillashaw in a pretty substantial way, UFC 280. That was back in October. So first fight in a while for him.
Looking forward to it. Again, it's all coming up tomorrow on ESPN pay-per-view. Should be a lot of fun, and we've been enjoying talking to these UFC fighters as well. Come back with more in a moment. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues right after this ABC 7 News update on 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk, you know, as it starts to heat up a little bit here in El Paso, before you know it, we'll be in the 90s. It'll feel like summer is here. Hey, more important than ever, folks, to keep yourself hydrated. And when you talk about doing what's right for you and right for your body as well as for your family, Adrian, all I keep thinking about is our friends at Clean Water of El Paso.
Oh, most definitely. I always think about them. In fact, some of my friends and extended family have they've started to incorporate Clean Water of El Paso in their life, especially whenever they're visiting my house. They love my flow line system. They like the custom water system that we have, and knowing that we've got the soft water, we don't have the hard water at our home. I'm about two months into my clean water system from Clean Water of El Paso, and I told this story a while back, but I'm going to say it again. Recently, I have a friend. He's a big gym guy. He always carries a gallon of water around. He has kind of a water dispenser at his house. Water dispenser was run a little dry. So instead of buying a new one, he just said, "Hey, I'm around your area. Do you mind if I stop by? Can I fill up my gallon with your clean water of El Paso water?" And I said, "Hey, go ahead. This actually is a great story I could tell on Sports Talk. So I think this is awesome." He said, "Hey, I love the way your water tastes. It reminds me of when I get just the regular water at Starbucks for free." I was like, "Well, that's probably because people like Starbucks. People like Hotel Indigo use clean water of El Paso." So you could do that. You could take advantage of their free water analysis online, cleanwaterofelpaso.com. Or give them a call, 915-856-0059. You can schedule a free water analysis with them at 915-856-0059 with Clean Water of El Paso.
9 in front of 5 as we continue here on Sports Talk. Meanwhile, 5 o'clock hour, be a busy one. Omar Thomas will join us on the phone lines. Brand new head coach at Socorro High. That happened last week. I am excited about that for OT. And, you know, again, you look at some of these former UTEP basketball players and what they've done at the high school world. I mean, first off, if you really want to go back to the 60s, you could look at Tony Harper and Kenny John, okay, and Bobby Leslie. I mean, it's a long, long list of 60s players, Nolan Richardson, for crying out loud, who all had a terrific impact on the high school basketball world. Then Jim Forbes, early 70s. And then we go through that list, and you start to think about all the players that, you know, have done it. Now, remember, Omar Thomas didn't play for Don Haskins. Omar Thomas played for 1 year for Billy Gillespie, 1 year for Doc Sadler. But it's great to see, especially with guys like Gene Costello, who played for Jason Rabideau, and the opportunity he has now, along with Omar. I mean, this is what it's all about, Adrian. A lot of former UTEP players over the years have really made an impact in the high school basketball coaching world.
Yeah, I love to see this, because now you're having that local pipeline, the local connection. You have UTEP standouts staying home and or staying here in El Paso, making El Paso their home. And this is awesome, because these people that were reeling off were so talented at UTEP, and now they're instructing the youth on how to get better at this level, at the high school level. So we see it in football, we see it in basketball. I love the fact that we have this kind of UTEP pipeline for some of these coaches across the city.
And it just goes to show you that some of these student athletes that come to El Paso to play ball stay in town and get into teaching and get into coaching. And then this happens, and I think that's terrific. You know, for OT, it's kind of interesting, because years ago, I thought he was going to be in the college basketball world as an assistant coach, because he got in with Doc at Southern Miss and wanted to come back to UTEP, but unfortunately, that didn't happen. So instead, he went back in at the high school level, and now he's going to be a high school head coach. Good for Omar.
Yeah, and if you think about it, guys who played around his kind of time, Jason Williams, also a coach and, is in charge of all the Nike circuit here locally. Connor Tucker, you know, a little after that, but still, he's a head coach here in El Paso, also out of the UTEP basketball program. Recently, out of the football ranks, guys like Trayvon Hughes, guys like Trevor Vidito, have even landed assistant jobs for football. So, love that.
If this keeps OT away from the baseball field blowing a whistle at kids' games, I will be really, really excited.
Oh, man. You had to go there, right? You had to.
Did you really think I was going to just forget
about that? Well, you have to bring it up now.
I know. It's true. I mean, now he can blow his whistle at his players. That's what I want. All right. OT coming up next. We'll meet the brand new head coach at Socorro High as Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue. Hey, are we watching UFC 288 tomorrow? Are we going to see that Cejudo
fight? Unfortunately not, Steve. I talked to them about a pass. Unfortunately, they do not. But I have applied for us to be on the UFC Fight Pass. So in the future, we should be getting these either live or after the fact.
Oh, so there actually is something you can apply for?
That's correct, yes.
Oh, okay.
And so I already did that for us.
That's cool. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Hey, are you ready to talk to the brand new head boys basketball coach at Socorro High School?
This is going to be great, Steve. I'm so fired up about this one right here.
Me too. Let's welcome him back to the program. He is one of only two former Miners to be in the 1,000-point club after just two seasons with the team. That was our trivia question. It's not just Jim Bad News Barnes, but it's Omar Thomas, who joins us live on the phone lines right now. OT, welcome back to the program, and congratulations on what's got to be such a great opportunity for you and your family.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be back on the show, but it is, man. It's a school that's growing. You got some hardworking kids here. So it's a great opportunity for myself to come back and give back to the city of El Paso, where OT became OT at. So it's a great feeling.
Way to drop a third-person reference in your first answer on this radio show. Congratulations. I'm proud of you for that. Thank you.
Yes. I appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. Hey, listen, all kidding aside, you spend 1 year at Socorro. You're an assistant coach with the girls' team. You spend a year at Pebble Hills as an assistant with the boys' team. And after years in college and pro, because you spent time at Southern Miss with Doc, you had a 12-year pro career, now getting this opportunity. Just tell me what it means to you after all the years you've been in the game, and how, I said this on the show a few days ago, 20 years ago, you were arriving in El Paso as the Junior College Player of the Year, along with Philly Rivera. You were the two JUCO Players of the Year. You took UTEP to the tournament back-to-back years, and you really made the, you know, your legend here in town. Now you get to do it as a head coach in high school. It's such a cool opportunity.
You know what? It's a great story, and how everything happened. I was at Pebble Hills. I had my alternative certification, so I had to pass the two. I had to pass my content and PPR in 1 year, and I didn't get it done. It was a lot. I failed the test a couple times. I became a substitute. So during the substitute time, I just kept studying, and then I wound up substituting at Socorro for like 2.5 months. And I passed, and the job just happened. Like it was like perfect timing on everything. So the principal that hired me, Dr. Astorga, he helped me get to Pebbles, and then he transferred to Socorro, as well as the football coach and the girls basketball coach who I worked with at Pebbles. So it was just kind of like perfect timing how it happened. But, you know, everything happens for a reason, guys. I'm glad that I'm here. I'm glad that, you know, the kids know me, they look me up, and the most important thing, their parents know me and remember me as a basketball player, and for me to give back and teach them the game and show them the hard work and what it's going to take to get to the next level is huge, man. It's an honor.
Omar Thomas with us here on Sports Talk as we continue. You talk about that PPR test that you had a tough time with. Was that more difficult than any class you ever took during your 2 years at UTEP?
You know what? And it's going to sound crazy. The content was harder than the PPR, which was kind of crazy because it was PE. But the PPR I took twice. Yeah, the PPR wasn't a problem. And it's just so weird how it happened, because I was one of the finalists for the Pebble Hills job, but I didn't have my PPR. I didn't have my certification at the time. So I think that played a big factor and them hiring me as the head coach, but, you know, it worked out perfectly. I'm happy. I'm great to say that. You know, I'm the Bulldogs coach, and I'm ready to make some noise in the city of El Paso.
OT, we've seen Socorro ISD really put an emphasis on athletics. Does that give you kind of, you know, peace of mind knowing that you've got an athletic director up at the top who really values athletics and really does a lot for the coaches up top?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just playing athletics just, you know, helps students out. You know, it's a key part of them growing to be young men or young women. In sports, it's the key. It helped me out. It taught me so many different things. And I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for basketball, the discipline, the motivation, the time management. So all that I want to take and give – and show the players how basketball can change your life as a man, as a husband, as a future husband, or a father, son, whatever. I want to use basketball to install real life situations that's going to happen to them. So basketball is the greatest tool that I think can help these young guys become young men.
You know, I'm really excited about the challenge for you out there at Socorro, because about 3-4 seasons ago, Tim McNally had that team 17-14, 5-5 in district. In fact, probably the best season that he ever had when he joined up at Socorro. And prior to Coach McNally, you had Thomas Gamboa, and before that, Peter Morales, and before that, Teddy Williams, who, like you, was a former UTEP basketball player, played for Coach Haskins in the 70s, and he was coaching Socorro about 15 years ago. So, you know, it's never been a place that has been able to consistently win, which is one of the reasons why I'm excited for you in this challenge, because if you're able to do that and turn this thing around, that would really be a huge story in this community.
That's the plan. I'm going to attack this just like as a player. You know, I always was doubted. You know, I was the underdog, and we're the underdogs over here, but I want everyone to believe that. Because I just ran a quick 30, 40-minute practice, and I'm just going to tell you this. I got some pits out here. I just got to get those guys hungry enough to start attacking, but I got some dogs out here.
Well,
so I want everyone to sleep on us, and, you know, I'm a first-year coach, and all that's fine. We're going to stay humble. We're going to stay in the gym, and we're going to eat. We're going to grind it. We're going to grind it out here. But the kids they're hungry. The energy that I'm receiving from the players right now is unbelievable. So hopefully it can translate over to the summer workouts and build on to the year. But I like my team. I like the guys. I like everything about it. It's a little difficult. It's like kind of like not El Paso, but it's its own special community. But as well, so it's going to be fun, I promise.
OT, who are some of the coaches throughout your career who you've taken from and who will influence you at this level that you could say, I took a little bit of this coach and that coach to your approach when you're going to be dealing here with Socorro?
I'm going to say, like, of course, Billy. You just can't do the things that really did to us in this day and era of basketball. Doc was the X's and O's guy, so I try to be X's and O's. One of the most influential guys was the Serbian coach that coached me in Serbia. He was the national coach that coached the Serbian team with the team that they beat the USA with in 2002. So like his mindset was crazy. Like, his go hard. He had like a Billy Gillespie mindset, but he was just European, but just like old school. So I'm gonna mix that with the new style of play and mentality that these kids are used to, but also take back and bring back the old school mentality where they gotta work and grind and actually know how it feels to really work hard. You know, these kids shoot around for 30 minutes and think they really worked out. No, so I'm trying to reinforce their minds and have them work like how I worked, that mindset. So once they can get that mindset, I think they'll be good, and we can compete at every game, every good weekend.
In the one season you played for Billy Gillespie, you went from 6 wins to 26 wins. And we saw the transformation and how it took you into the NCAA tournament and nearly winning an NCAA tournament game. You said something really interesting. You said you're going to take from Billy Gillespie what you're able to give him, although there's some things you can't do. And I feel like in today's era, there are probably a lot of things that when you grew up playing basketball, there are things that you might have been a part of as a player that now, because times have changed, you just can't do those same things to your players.
Oh, just it's just the mentality. Like, Billy, is a great coach, but he challenged each and every one of us. And also he had Doc there that was a different type of leader as well. So Billy, bad guy, Doc, good guy, but it was two different strategies. But Billy challenged you, and I'm from the inner city, so I never wanted to give in to Billy. So it just put more flame, put more gas on the fire to make me even want to work even harder and to prove him wrong. So, but it was all part of Coach D's mindset, how he manipulates you to getting the most out of you. That's what he does. He finds that button that he can push and push, and it brings the best out you. And then we brought in as a team, and that's what I'm going to try to do here. But I know I can't cope everyone that hard that how Billy G did.
Was Billy? Yep. Yep.
I'm sorry.
Was Billy more physical or mental when you're talking about the challenge?
Oh, it was never physical. It's mental. He wanted to make sure that he had strong guys. Nothing physical, because I mean, he coached all Americans. Like, it's physical, you can do. Mental is the game. That's the hardest part of playing basketball, is the mental aspect. And once you master that part of sports and basketball, like, there's nothing that can really affect you. But Billy challenged us, and we all brought in, and we all came together. That's why we had a good year that year.
OT,
a great year.
Hey, OT, want to ask you specifically about this current UTEP coaching staff, you being one of the greats to play for the Miners. Do you hope to have a good relationship with Coach Golding here to maybe have some kind of relationship with some players, maybe go check out some practices now that you're running things out at Socorro?
Guys, you guys are a little bit too late. Joe, Coach Golding is my guy. I went out with him to celebrate me getting hired. He did a letter of recommendation for me. I wanted to thank him. We're setting our practice schedules now that they're going to come up here at Socorro and practice 2 days for us so they can see how the kids get to see a Division I coach, how they work, how they prepare. So, yes, I have reached out to Coach Golden. He's been great. He's been helping me along the way during the interview process, and Coach Cox. So, it's been great. And he said he'll do whatever he needs to help me out and be successful and help the kids buy in. So, Coach Golden's been great for me. And hopefully, he get a couple players in. They can change their program around. He's a good coach. He's demanding. You just got to get a couple more guards that can probably score. But I think he'll turn it around this year. He had a little bit of success in that first year, so he got the taste. He know what it feels like. So I think he's out there recruiting now, and they should be able to get it done this year.
I'm looking at your roster, Omar, and you lose guys like Eric Ressa, along with Johnny Garcia, and I believe also from last season, Alexis Gutierrez. But you bring back a sophomore in Isaiah Carbajal, who played really well last season and will be coming into his junior year. Tell me what you've had a chance to see from him and how he could turn into one of your leaders starting next season.
Isaiah is talented. He's super talented. Probably got a bowl come up a little bit. I want to play fast. We're going to play D. We're going to get after it. So he's got to be physically, mentally ready. But as far as skills, oh, man, he's one of the best in the city. I guarantee you. And it's not just him. I got some guard play, but hopefully I'm going to challenge Isaiah to be a leader and hold him accountable and hold other players accountable, because we've got a good, young, strong group that we can make some noise. But hopefully he'll step up to the challenge and be that leader. But he's not the only good guard I got, but he's probably the most talented one we got.
Well, listen.
Flat out talent, yes.
Oh, happy for you. Congratulations on the opportunity. Means you need to keep in touch with us on the show because we'll have you back and we'll be talking some Socorro basketball. And I'm sure you're also looking in just getting a chance to go at it with some of the best teams in the city. Something else you'll do because there are plenty of other former minors that have gone on to become coaches in high school basketball that have done some really good things. And I look at a guy like Eugene Costello and what he's turned his career into. It's been fun to watch that and a lot of other greats as well.
Yeah, you know what? It's first year, 6A. It don't get no. I mean, this is big time right here. I gotta get my guys mentally ready. I gotta get myself ready. So as of right now, I'm trying to prepare my staff now. I got a couple guys in mind for JV and freshman spots, but I'm gonna be real careful because they gotta have my vision and my goal, and I know what kind of kids we got. We got a special group. And those special groups is hard to come by, so I got to get my guys ready for Miguel Ayala. He's at Franklin. And I know those guys are coming. Pete Morales always have a great team, great coach. America's with Brooks. So it's night in and night out. It's like playing in a Power Five, but at the high school level. So I got to get myself ready. I got to get my team ready as far as my coaching staff to help me, to help the kids. But I'm excited. It's going to be fun. It's going to be ups and downs, but we're going to continue to grind, and it's going to be exciting basketball. Hopefully, I bring back a lot of joy and excitement to the game of, to the city of Socorro.
Ira Malcolm just tweeted the show, Socorro High School basketball is going to be a force. There is his prediction with Omar Thomas, new head coach, and joining us on the program. All right, OT, good stuff. I haven't seen you at the baseball fields at Southwest Ballpark at all. What's been going on? You've been so busy at Socorro, you haven't had a chance to bring that whistle of yours over to some Little League games?
Hold on. I always keep the whistle, Steve. Always got the whistle, right?
Thank you. Thank you. I dream about that whistle at night when I'm really in a good deep sleep. I'm like, Coach, where's the whistle?
Steve, hey, I'm glad you said that. Me and Coach Primus was talking about you today. I don't know how we got about whistles. I told him I had a phone call from you guys that I was going to be on the air, and then I told him the story. He started laughing. But I haven't been up there. My son, he didn't play baseball this year. He's been all football and basketball now. So I can, give the whistle a little break. So, and I know you and your wife, probably so happy that I'm not there,
I want you there next to me just to talk to you during the games, but it has been a little quieter without you. I'm not going to lie to you, OT. That's right.
No, I've been just up here trying to get everything right here, trying to be the best husband I could be, best father, and best leader and mentor, man. So I've been, my daughter's playing basketball at Socorro, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to coach her, but, my day's been busy. I mean, it's hectic. I get home 9 o'clock every night. So it's been busy with my wife and Malik and Amira and, putting everything together to be the leader of this new journey of my life, new chapter in my life. So
good for you. Good for you. Hey, listen, all kidding aside, really happy for you, excited for your opportunity, and I'll look forward to getting a chance to see you on the floor this season when you coach. I promise you that.
Okay, just make sure I'm going to be tweeting out gear. Make sure you cut you some Socorro, some dog mentality gear. So I'll send y'all the link so y'all can support us and come wear and show out the red and white.
That sounds like a plan. All right, OT, we'll talk soon. Take care. Congrats.
All right, thank you guys. Have a good day. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe.
You too. He's Omar Thomas, brand new head coach at Socorro High School. Joins us here on Sports Talk. 22 past. Come back with more in a moment, right after Charlie One, who has this traffic update for us. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue. 26 past the hour. Coming up in less than an hour, Tim Haggerty. Story time around 6:15. Hags could not contain his excitement to me. Texted me during the game last night while he was working and calling the game about today being for story time a very special edition. In fact, he said that it's a sequel. And he is excited because this is the first ever part two of a story time. And for Tim to be excited and actually text us that, that's a big deal. That is a big deal. So if he's excited, we're excited. And it's going to be awesome.
I'm fired up about this one. We've never had a sequel before on Storytime, and we've had some bangers on Storytime before, like some all-time great Tim Haggerty Storytime tales that he's given us here on Sports Talk. So to get a part two of one of those, sign me up. I'm ready.
Yeah, I am too. I think it's going to be phenomenal. So that, again, will be happening in our 6 o'clock hour. Happy about that. Happy to have OT on the show. Super excited to see what he can do, especially knowing, guys, that this is a program that really has never been able to put together, you know, successful winning seasons, plural. I've seen one season in which they were over 500, but it's very difficult to win out at Socorro.
It is, and I would also say in 6A in particular, it's very difficult to win. So it's not just where they are necessarily in the city of El Paso. It's the fact that they're in 6A as well, and they're competing against your Eastlakes, your Eastwood, your Franklins of the world. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's difficult to go up against some of those 6A teams and try to be consistently a winner. And you know what? I like the fact that he said, hey, count us out here in year one. We're going to be the underdogs. And we're going to have that kind of underdog mentality for the season.
I do, too. And I really do think that, as good as his team can be from a talent standpoint, if he could tap into those guys mentally and do it in a way that you can do it these days, meaning you can't challenge youngsters mentally now like you could 20 years ago. You just can't. Society's changed. You can't get away with things now that you did 20 years
ago.
Yeah,
you're not going to berate people. It's probably for the better. 100%.
And trust me when I tell you this, okay? I attended Billy Gillespie practices. I know what he's talking about. Billy Gillespie was a mental mastermind in the sense that, yeah, he broke you down. But the idea was to get the most out of you and challenge you to where you would be the best individual you could be. It's just the things he did then, you probably can't do some of that stuff now. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I feel like OT, from every conversation we've had, he's such a player's coach. He's somebody who can motivate players simply because he's been there before. He's done it at the highest levels. He's known here in the community in a big way. I was talking with Sal off air. You talk about some of the more relevant UTEP alumni to still be around the community. He's right up there. OT is probably as recognizable and relevant as ever.
Alicia, as a high school and college student athlete, did you ever have a coach that really challenged you mentally and tried to, I don't want to say push the limits, but at least go to go someplace that they felt they could just get the most out of you and go after you mentally for that?
So I actually had two coaches. One was on the golf side, and that was Coach Brooks from America's, the high school coach. He really pushed me in golf mentally because I wasn't used to being like individual. I was more of a, I always played volleyball, so I was more team and like never individual mindset. And I clearly remember in one of our district plays, it was like a preview. I played really, really bad. And it was the first time it was like, get out of your head. And it was really bad. And that was the first and last time he did it to me. But I always remember it every time I'm on the golf course and getting in my head, like that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then I had a coach, Coach Bennett. And she coached me for club volleyball, and she was rough. She was rough, but she was a lot of fun, and she was the best volleyball coach I had.
Now, you say she was rough. Rough in what sense? Just she also was trying to motivate you and maybe challenge you mentally to get the most out of you?
Yeah, it was more of like mental because like if you would mess up, you were out kind of deal, and she would tell you what you were doing wrong, and it was more like your parents were there too, and they were watching, and they just let it happen kind of deal because you were playing bad. And she was also, she never gave you like, oh, good job. That was never out of her mouth. But you knew when you were doing a good job because she didn't talk to you. But everything you did bad, you knew about it. And it was good. It was, it built people up. But that team, we went through girls a lot. We stayed with seven girls at the end, and that was it because a lot of girls couldn't take the practice.
Yeah, I hear you. It's not, it, truthfully, it's not for everybody, is it? It really isn't. You have to be tough mentally for that.
Yeah, no, 100%. Especially because you know she's doing it for the best, and some people think like they're just doing it to hurt you kind of deal. But you know in the end when you're battling in an actual game, like your mindset's there, so it makes you a better player.
32 passed as we continue more with Adrian, Alicia, your phone calls as well, 505-6009. As Sports Talk continues, let's get right back to this bottom of the hour Sports Center update. This also happened. The Indianapolis Colts today released Nick Foles, and that is interesting. You know, he signed a two-year deal with Indy last offseason, reuniting with Frank Reich, who was relieved of his duties last year, replaced by Eagles offensive coordinator Shane Steichen. So here's a guy who only had two starts last year. They were both losses, threw four picks, no touchdowns. And, you know, if you think about it, Nick Foles went from Super Bowl MVP to really kind of a journeyman over the last few years. Hasn't done anything. He's had a hard time even starting. And that's been tough for him. So now you probably look at a backup role. The only question is, what place could make sense for Nick Foles at this stage of his career as a backup?
Yeah, it's tough. It's really difficult. I mean, first off, with the Colts, it looks like they're going to be handing things off to Minshew or Ellinger first, and then it'll be Richardson after. I like Ellinger, and we got a chance to see him a little bit more last year. For Foles, I think that this might be toward the end of his career. Like, we might be starting to look at the end of his career.
Really?
Maybe Carolina gets him. I know he's only 34 years old, but, man, I don't – has he played any kind of relevant football in the last, you know, couple months or years, I should say?
Could he back up Jordan Love in Green Bay right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of backup roles he could
take. I'm not talking about a starting job. I'm just saying, where could Nick Foles go as a backup quarterback at this point?
I think the obvious one that you look at is reuniting with Frank Reich out in Carolina. He could be the backup to Bryce Young there. You look at another coach that he's familiar with in Doug Peterson. He could be the backup out for Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville if you really want. You go those two places. I guess those are early ones. Don't really know the full extent of their depth chart. But I'm curious, Steve, when it's all said and done, does Nick Foles go with the list of guys like Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer as kind of the lower-end quarterbacks to win a Super Bowl and not really do much other than that?
So it's so interesting because I always like to play the what-if game. And the question is, what if the Eagles, after winning the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, had chosen him to be their starting quarterback the following season? Because remember, there were two choices, okay? There was Foles, and then there was the younger, higher upside guy that they had invested so heavily in who got hurt, which is why Nick Foles was able to make it in the first place and win a Super Bowl. And when given that choice, the Eagles, there was even talk on this show that the Eagles should have gone back and at least given Foles the opportunity. But they wanted Carson Wentz, and they thought that he was their guy. He was their future. So they banked on Carson Wentz. And Carson Wentz was a flop. Got hurt a lot, and when he was healthy, was never the same. Never the quarterback they hoped. And now they've got one in Jalen Hurts. But had they stayed with Foles after winning the Super Bowl, who knows what Philly could have done in those following seasons?
Yeah, I think we're seeing Philly kind of get it back together right now from last season to this season. But I think if we would have stayed with Foles after the Super Bowl, I think it would have been pretty good.
Are you an Eagles fan?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
All right. I did not even realize that, Alicia, you were an Eagles fan.
Yes.
That's your beloved team. All right.
Yeah, but
Did you want Foles at the time after the Super Bowl, or did you want Wentz to be your quarterback?
No, I really wanted Foles. Wentz, I felt like he was a flop from the very beginning. He was always hurt. He didn't seem like he wanted to be out there. He didn't really mix with the team well. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of glad he got hurt, and then Foles took over and then got that Super Bowl. But I think if we would have stick with him, I think we would have had really good seasons after that.
What's up with all the we talk?
It's because I'm an Eagles fan.
I understand that. Did you ever play for the Eagles?
Yes.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
On right. TV.
There you go. That's, on what, playing video games?
Yeah.
On Madden?
Yep.
Okay, that's fine. There you go. I should.
That's a great answer, Steve. It is. You never got that answer.
No, I never have. I never have. You ever played for the Eagles? Yes, I have. I've played on Madden. I am definitely an Eagles player.
Yep, that's my choice.
I like that. That's a good answer. That's all right. You shut me up pretty quick. That's good. 39 passed as we continue here on Sports Talk, wrapping up hour two, and still to come, we've got another big hour to go, including Tim Haggerty, and he'll join us less than half an hour from now from Southwest University Park. So stay with us. More in a moment, right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. 48 passed the hour. We continue here on Sports Talk. Well, so much for Anthony Davis last night, having a monster game and the Lakers taking a 2-0 lead over the Warriors. Davis looked much more human last night. Golden State looked like they couldn't miss, and they just beat up on the Lakers in a big way, had a huge third quarter, and then just coasted to a win in which this game was, at one point, a 30-point game. All the stars were out, so the fourth quarter was basically garbage time. And, Adrian, just like Boston and what they did to Philadelphia, the Lakers were able to go back with at least a split, but Golden State looked like the superior team last night.
Yeah, can you imagine that real quick? You just mentioned the Celtics 76ers. Also the Heat Knicks, mm-hmm. that one split. Mm-hmm. That series is split right now. Same with, like we've talked about here, Lakers-Warriors. Only one that's 2-0 is Denver Phoenix. So this playoffs has just been outstanding. But yeah, yesterday was the blowout. And I really liked the first quarter by the Lakers. I thought they were keeping up. But as soon as Golden State started to hit their stride in the second quarter, I mean, really, when they're hitting those threes, they're hard to beat. And I was really impressed by Draymond Green again. He just initiated a lot offensively, 9 assists, 11 rebounds yesterday. That's what Draymond Green does. And when he is that productive like he was yesterday and disruptive on the defensive side with guys like Anthony Davis, that's the recipe to success for the Warriors. The interesting point is they started Jamichael Green yesterday, maybe for the first time all season long, and he really provided a nice boost for them to start things off. They went smaller as far as their lineup goes, and they caused fits for guys like Jared Vanderbilt and guys like Rui Hachimura in that game yesterday.
Yeah, they did. Now, Hachimura still scores 21 points, but on 8 of 14 shooting, but by the time he got going, it was pretty much over. And then, you know, you look at everybody else. LeBron was 23 on 10 of 18 shooting, but he was on the court when they were getting blown out. So was everybody. So was Davis. So was Reeves. So was Russell. Fact is, the Lakers just didn't have it. And when you got outscored 41-23 in the second quarter and then 43-24 in the third quarter, that was it. That's all she wrote. And, you know, they're still even at one apiece. They know, but Golden State looked really, really good last night.
I think the key for the Lakers is they need the monster performance by Anthony Davis three more times in order to win this series. Like LeBron's game yesterday, I actually liked it. I think he was a little passive at times. And, you know, those three-point attempts that he has can get a little ridiculous at times because he's just not shooting the three as well as he'd like. And it's got to be AD. It's got to be AD down low. It's got to also be LeBron down low, pushing guys down low in the block. He's tougher than everybody. He's stronger than all these guys he's going up against. Why not just post him up down low instead of taking the three-pointer if you're LeBron James?
It's a great question. Great question. And since we've got the doubleheader tonight with Celtics Sixers coming up here now, followed by Nuggets Suns, these are two very interesting games because if the Sixers rebound and Joel Embiid looks, you know, more like the MVP and less like he did in game two, Philly can take a 2-1 lead over Boston. And on the flip side, Suns, hey, this is it. I mean, it's do or die time. They lose at home and they go down 0-3 to Denver. stick a fork in them, they're probably getting swept right out of the postseason.
Yeah, with the Celtics, I just keyed on that last game. All the supporting cast members help. Grant Williams, it was also guys like Malcolm Brogdon. Those were the guys who really shined last game. Derek White as well. And so they have to get that production from their supporting cast in order to beat Philly tonight. And for Philly's sake, they have to stop all those guys. Make Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum beat you. And if that's the case, those guys go off and put up a 50-plus point game, well then sure, Boston could steal one on the road. That's why I'm so fascinated by this one. This was also the game in which Joel Embiid was honored before the game for the MVP award. So this one has a lot riding on it. And then for the Nuggets Suns game, give me Denver. I just have zero faith right now in Phoenix. They don't have Chris Paul going tonight. Denver's the underdog going into this one on the road.
4.5 points.
That's kind of weird, right? I mean, Denver's absolutely dominated this series. What does Vegas know that we don't know?
Maybe they think that the Suns are going to show up tonight. Well, I mean, that's obviously what they think.
Yeah, and maybe that's the case. There's always a Devin Booker possibility where he drops 45 or Kevin Durant just completely goes off and they win this one at home. So
Boston is a 2-point favorite tonight on the road.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And Phoenix is a 4.5-point favorite tonight at home. Those are two lines that both don't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Vegas knows something that we don't in both these games possibly. And I'm just curious. Let's see what happens here. The Celtics go with Al Horford here to start off at the five. Marcus Smart still gets the start at the one. Yep. Let's see what happens here. I'm so curious for Boston Philly tonight. This is a must watch in my opinion.
Derek White is probably the one guy that you don't really rely on as much as everybody else. And on the flip side, you've got Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, PJ Tucker, and then Joel Embiid.
Man, the way Tyrese Maxey is playing right now, over the offseason, there's going to be a lot. There could be some stars available that Philly kind of gets backed into trading for. And I'm saying this because James Harden's deal is running out after this year. He could end up back in Houston based on some rumors that have been swirling across league circles. If that's the case, Philly has an excellent trade chip in Tyrese Maxey, but if he's playing this well, do you trade him? That's a big question right now I have for Philadelphia. And if you reach all the way to the NBA Finals, why trade anybody? Try to run it back again if you're the Philadelphia next year.
Well, if you lose Harden, who do you replace him with?
Maybe Damian Lillard.
Yeah, oh, that would be wild.
He might be available this offseason in Portland. That's an interesting situation
out
there.
Very interesting. All right. 2 hours in the books. We got 30 minutes left to go, including a very special story time where Tim Haggerty will go where he's never gone before. Part two of a story time from years past. Excited about all that? It's still to come right here. We get you up till 6:30 in Chihuahua's baseball on 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk. Third and final hour. Along with Adrian, along with Alicia, Steve Kaplowitz with you. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. I showed up this morning at the radio station, and I was drinking some kind of spicy margaritas across the hall with our morning show. They were getting going early. It's kind of fun when, you can stop in, and next thing you know, they've already been knocking a few back. And they were not shy either about it.
8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning? Is that what we're talking about?
Nine.
Man.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, getting it started right. Hey, they go to bed early, so that's technically like lunch for them. So.
That's right.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's right. That's true. Hey, by the way, speaking of fun this weekend, I'll be hanging out at Temple Mount Sinai for the second annual Jewish Food Festival. Tomorrow, 6 to 10. Sunday, noon to 6. There will be a latke eating contest.
Nice.
Already been confirmed. Megan from the KLAQ Morning Show will be in the contest along with Colin Deaver.
That is great. I am so curious to hear how much latke they can eat, Steve. That's awesome stuff right there.
I am fascinated by that. Alicia, do you know what a latke is?
I do not know what a latke is.
It's a potato pancake is what it is.
Ooh, so, do you still put syrup on it?
No, you don't. No, it's not like that kind of pancake. Meaning it's like made with like shredded potatoes or hash browns, some onions in there. You eat it with either sour cream or you can also have it with applesauce.
So kind of like a hash brown?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly.
That sounds good.
It's like a hash brown, but it's like a it's like a disc, like a round thing. It's awesome, guys. It is awesome. So anyway, that is what's going to be up for tomorrow night around 7:30. That gets underway. I will be emceeing the contest and super excited about that. You know, that's going to be good. We got a couple of members of the media that are going to be there. Nico was in it last year. I've been told he's coming back this year just to watch, but he might end up, you know, joining at the last minute to see if he could try to win the contest, because he does think last year he was robbed of his title.
Well, then he could redeem himself. You know, we got two people then from the Buzz Adams Morning Show that could be making an appearance tomorrow in the contest, which is exciting. Steve, I'm curious. I'm so fascinated to hear how this ends up. When
not
it's
as fascinated as I am. I think Buzz is even going to be there. He's just not going to be in the contest. So they're going to have great music. Billy Towns will be playing tomorrow night. We've got some klezmer music. The food's going to be amazing too. A lot of really, really cool food will be there. They're going to have the pastrami sandwiches as well, and some great Middle Eastern food. It's going to be a lot of fun. Really excited about it. So look forward to seeing everybody out there at Temple Mount Sinai tomorrow and Sunday for the second annual Jewish Food Festival. So.
That's awesome, Steve. That's really exciting. It seems like every year it gets better and better. Like every time you promote it here on the show with us, it seems every year it's always topping itself.
If you and your better half have nothing going on tomorrow, then just make sure you you stop over. I like to.
Nice.
It'd be good to see you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate that, man.
So,
thanks for the invite.
That'll be fun. And who knows? Maybe Alyssa's going to get you to be a part of this thing. You never know. She might talk you into it.
Ooh. Okay. All right. Yeah. She would definitely do that.
Have you ever done celebrity eating contests?
No.
Have you ever tried to do a competitive eating?
No. I think I'd be terrible at it. Yeah. I mean, despite how I look, I feel like competitive eating is just not for me.
It's
I can't
hard.
Do that.
It's very difficult. I've never done it either. I've never wanted to. I mean, I enjoy eating, but just not like super fast and to the point where you know, it's timed and you have to eat as much as possible. That's really difficult.
You know, it kind of reminds me also when we used to do our KLAQ barbecue out at Wet n Wild, having people judge. Like, I was never asked to judge, but I probably couldn't do that either. I would just be like, oh, yeah, I love this one. I also love this one, too. So.
Oh, that I did. I did judge.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
See, that seems fun because then no one's looking at you. No, you don't have the spotlight there when you're shoving things down your mouth like that.
And you don't have to eat like in excess, the best way to put it. You can kind of just enjoy it and just go a little at a time. Let's put it that way. So it's nice.
Yeah, most definitely. I probably could not do an eating contest like that. Maybe do the judging down the line. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, by the way, wanted to let everybody know that if you go to our website at 600ESPNElPaso.com, Adrian's got the preview for UFC 288. Super excited about that. He did a great job. Joe Rod's got a story on tonight's Locos matchup. They're trying to get 4 in a row against Colorado Springs.
Yeah, that's a big one for them. And they've got the home matchup next week as well, which is also something to look forward to next week on, I think it's Saturday, May 12th. So Locomotive FC, big stretch here. They've got to, they have to do what they can to try to get another dub tonight.
Yeah, they do. That would be big. Brian Klarhout joined us earlier this week in studio to talk about his club, and man, what a difference it makes, huh? They were just absolutely terrific these last 3 matches, and trying to do it again. And I think you go to San Diego and you beat them, that really speaks volumes for just how good they were. So yeah, I was excited about that, and looking forward to seeing if they can get it done tonight against Colorado Springs. So that should be terrific. I was wondering if this man was going to call. I was. Because years ago, Brandon Cohn was in a hot dog eating contest at Cohen Stadium. And this was, we all thought he was the heavy favorite to win, because we know how much Brandon loves to eat. But what happened was that when everybody was just stuffing their face, he was like enjoying all the food to the point where he was like eating at a snail's pace, because he didn't want to just, you know, stuff hot dogs in, you know, left and right. So, you know, there were people that were up to like 10, 12. He was on like 3 at that point.
Was he putting mustard on it still and stuff like that?
Well, let's ask him.
This is great. This is an awesome story.
He's going to tell us about his big bout with competitive eating years and years ago. Coney, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, Steve. I couldn't help but to call and hearing you guys talk about competitive eating contests. So, yeah, I mean, it was me and Fernando Cuevas and Buzz Adams had a bet.
Yes.
That, you know, it was a disgusting bet. Anyways, luckily I won by like a nose only because I think I was able to eat like one more hot dog than him. And I didn't eat that many because it just like after a while, since it was timed, it was horrible. It was like I like you like to enjoy my food and indulge, and I'm looking for the relish and the sauerkraut and the pickles, and you know, like they're timing us and I'm trying to get the bread down and multiple hot dogs. I think I ate like 2 and they were all disappointed at me, you know, again, but at least I won. Nevertheless, I still beat him and I didn't have to go, you know, and deal with that terrible bet that Buzz made. But it was not an easy feat, man, and I don't think I would ever join a competitive eating contest again.
Including latkes tomorrow night.
Well, that's all you had to say. You had me at latkes, you know.
I do understand. I get it. But here's the thing: even when you're at the height of your eating prowess, I said it. You were never built for speed. You were built to just eat and enjoy. In fact, I seem to recall that when you were done with the hot dogs, you wanted to take a few of them up to eat them and enjoy them later after the contest ended.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could always put it away, and Adrian could tell you that. I mean, Adrian and I have been out for a million noshes together. And I mean, usually I can put it away, but the problem is that I had never been in that circumstance before, mm-hmm. and it was brutal, like I said. And yes, I am not at all about speed. I'm about relaxing, enjoying myself, and yeah, I grabbed a few more to go after that, and certainly the whole ordeal was it was an experience, but it also proved to me that no matter how much I can eat it, as you know, Cap, I can eat. You know, for me, it wasn't the most wonderful experience, and I decided never again. But thank God I still beat the guy, though, nevertheless.
Good for you. I'm happy you did. I'll never forget that day because when it was going on, we really hyped it up. We were trying to make it like the biggest hot dog eating contest ever in El Paso at the ball game, and they did a good job. I thought the Diablos did well bringing all those people together for that contest.
Yeah, absolutely, and I really don't know how on earth these guys do it, like Joey Chestnut in the 4th of July every year at Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, because, you know, being a competitive eater, those guys truly are athletes. I mean, I guess, you know, with the eating sense, but yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's a lot harder than it looks. I mean, no matter how much you love any type of food, when you're said, okay, eat this many in a minute, it's darn near impossible just because you're stuffing your mouth so fast and it's so uncomfortable. And the hardest part about the hot dog eating contest was the bread. You know, I'm trying to dip it in the water and emulate Chestnut. That didn't work for crap. Let me just tell you that right now.
Yeah, Adrian was wondering if you had a chance to put condiments on your hot dogs, but you didn't. You had to just do it the same way they do at the Nathan's contest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was the worst part about the whole thing was that, you know, I hate eating a plain hot dog. I mean, I like mustard, ketchup, relish, the whole nine yards. And literally, I had no time. It was like, you know, I'm not going to sit there. You have any great poupon? Excuse me. I mean, I'm literally like, you know, just give me the darn hot dog. I got to eat it plain. And that in itself, you can keep, my friend.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, listen, I appreciate you going down memory lane with us on the show. Who do you like tomorrow? Deaver, Megan from the Q Morning Show, David Perlman, who is the reigning backed champion from last year. We've got room for one more. Between those three, who do you think, who's your money on?
Well, I know David Perlman. We went and celebrated Passover together last year. That man can eat. I'd rather clothe him than feed him. So I got Perlman winning in a runaway. I mean, the guy, no one will even get as close to how many latkes Perlman can eat.
Yeah, he did. He really went ahead. And last year, he wasn't even supposed to be in the contest, but he got in to fill the last spot. And then he, I guess, had pride and just, it was rather, rather impressive to watch. So, hey, if you get a chance, stop on by tomorrow. We'd love to see you out there.
I appreciate that, and also I'll be going by on Sunday as well. Shout out to my friend Laura Brandon Rosales. She'll be singing on Sunday at the Jewish Food Festival. Looking forward to it.
Look forward to seeing you then, Coney. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Cap. Take care.
Brandon Cohn taking us back to memory lane when he was part of that contest for the hot dogs. And, yeah, they had to dip it in water. That was just not good. It's not the way to do it.
That's gross, man. Who likes soggy bread? That's disgusting.
Nobody. I want to know who's the one that came up with that idea. Aren't you?
Yeah.
Just like eat hot dogs, then dunk the bread and just do it that way?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was Joey. Maybe we have to point the finger at Joey Chestnut.
I always thought Kobayashi might have been the one that started. I don't know who started the dunking contest. I don't know. All right. Hey, are you ready for round two of
yes.
the very special story time?
Let's do it. I can't wait.
Tim Haggerty next, right here, after we continue 600 ESPN El Paso.